What you are in your inmost being escapes your examination in rather the same way that you can't look directly into your own eyes without using a mirror. You can't bite your own teeth. You can't taste your own tongue. And you can't touch the tip of this finger with the tip of this finger. And that's why there's always an element of profound mystery.
Something sets off the notion of a bird. Maybe you're thinking of a skylark you saw yesterday, or maybe you have a feeling of wanting to fly away. The idea of bird includes all sorts of sub-ideas branching off, even in normal consciousness, such as flying, flight, wings, and tail. In the expanded or hypomanic mind, there are two things happening. Thoughts are speeded up in time, more ideas per minute, and expanded in space, more ideas at once. While thinking of a bird in this state, one might also have a sense of airplanes, rudders, ostrich, robin redbreast, blue jay, dove, eagle, hawk, etc. And beyond even this, flutter, angels, Pegasus, harpies, Medusa, and so on. One could quickly go into a stream of thought from here having to do with mythology.
And it's whispered that soon, if we all call the tune,
then the piper will lead us to reason.
And a new day will dawn for those who stand long, and the forests will echo with laughter.
Does anybody remember laughter? your hedgerow, call the gardener. It's just a spring clean for the May Queen.
Yes, there are two pounds, so you can go by one in the long run.
There's still time to change the road you're on.
Could it be that my entire life is in vain? Or am I lost?
It makes me wonder.
Most of you have heard of Zen, but before going on to explain any details about it, I want to make one thing absolutely clear. I am not a Zen Buddhist. I am not advocating Zen Buddhism. I'm not trying to convert anyone to it. I have nothing to sell. I'm an entertainer. That is to say, in the same sense that when you go to a concert and you listen to someone play Mozart, he has nothing to sell except the sound of the music. He doesn't want to convert you to anything. He doesn't want you to join an organization in favor of Mozart's music as opposed to, say, Beethoven's. And I approach you in the same spirit as a musician with his piano or violinist with his violin. I just want you to enjoy a point of view which I enjoy. Now then, when that's been said, and I hope it's put your minds at rest, let me give you, first of all, some simple historical information. Zen is a form of Buddhism. It originated in China about 500 AD. And about 1200 AD, it migrated to Japan, where it exists today. And it is a form, it's a way of life that has had an immense influence on the arts and on the culture, the poetry and architecture of the Far East. It has lately become of enormous interest to many people in other parts of the world. Now, normally when one talks about Buddhism, and Zen is a form of Buddhism, it is supposed that you're talking about a religion. And people are apt to classify themselves as Buddhists, as they might say, I am a Catholic, or a Methodist, or a Baptist, or an Episcopalian, or a Jew. But that is rather misleading. Buddhism is not a religion in that sense. If we want to find an equivalent to Buddhism in our society today in the West, probably the nearest thing to it is psychotherapy. When a person goes to a psychiatrist or a psychoanalyst to work out a serious personal problem, not because he's just nutty, I mean, not necessarily because he has hallucination or excessive singing in the ears with no clear physical origin, but when a person feels that his whole life is somehow disoriented and wrong, and he doesn't go to the preacher because the preacher only moralizes to him and says, my man, you should have more faith in God or something. So he goes instead to a doctor because in our day, a man with the tag of science on him has more prestige than a man who has the tag of religion. And so when a psychiatrist goes to work on you, his objective is more or less to change your state of consciousness. That is to say, if your state of consciousness, your state of mind, is one of being day after day constantly depressed, the objective of going to a psychiatrist or a psychotherapist is to have your state of consciousness changed to one of happiness. Now, in a somewhat similar way, the objective of Buddhism in all its forms is to bring about a fundamental change in a human being's everyday state of consciousness. If I make it yet more specific, it's to bring about a change in your sense of personal identity, that is to say, in your sensation of who and what you are.
British visitors were already struck by oil's pervasiveness in American culture. Two of them, E.H. Davenport and S.R. Cook, set down this 1923 comparison. Travel but a little in the country and you will gain the impression that the modernism of the United States flowed from its oil wells. Outwardly, oil occupies there the place which coal occupies in Great Britain.
The point is, the mind in this state doesn't think of all the possible connections and branches, just much more than the normal consciousness mind, and more quickly. By virtue of the fact that there are more thoughts going on in this state, statistically the chances that you will encounter any of these sub-ideas outside of yourself is greater. When this happens, you have this kind of aha experience, which we tend to call coincidence. An outside object has coincided with an inner thought. One would think this is concomitant with a chemical change in the brain, as is any subjective experience, perhaps an increase in dopamine. One might, for example, in the expanded hypomanic state, while thinking about birds, see someone wearing a Paul McCartney and a Wings t-shirt, or overhear a conversation about angels, or see a condor flying on TV, or see a commercial for Hitchcock's The Birds, or hear a song by The Birds on the radio, or see a billboard advertising Dove soap, or see an airplane flying low advertising buffalo wings at a nearby restaurant, or any number of possible coincidences accompanied by a pleasurable aha.
It was very much like stepping into a Salvador Dali painting. Okay, instantly everything was surreal. Where it puts his brain, where it puts his memory, where it puts his mind, his thinking ability, everything else.
What do you mean, why doesn't she call? She gave up after she got her $130 phone bill or whatever the hell it was.
I agree with everything the last gentleman said. That's the problem with, you know, America now, is the media makes blanket statements. The only thing they have to rely on is that Bush lied. Well, if he had lied, that's fine. But now we're in there for the long run.
Well, what should we do to
not the long haul?
Well, what should we do to him for lying?
Well, I don't believe it was lying. I believe
you don't. Well, wait a minute. How can it be false intelligence if he was told in October of 2002 that there were no weapons of mass destruction? He's told that by Iraqi's foreign minister. Now, how is that faulty intelligence?
You can't trust the Iraqis as far as this. You can't trust...
He was working for us, sir.
Wow.
He was told... Excuse me. What about the fact that Tony Blair's equivalent of the CIA said in July of 2002 that Bush had already decided to go to war? What about that?
Well, I stand behind him 100%.
Well, you didn't say that. You said he wasn't lying. You said it was faulty intelligence.
Wow.
I just told you that the intelligence communities told him there were no weapons of mass destruction.
Well, were there still a threat?
What was their threat? To whom?
To us, as Americans.
Oh, good. Show me what the threat was. They have no weapons of mass destruction. What threat did they represent?
Saddam Hussein.
What was the threat? What could he do to us?
He could do a whole lot.
Like what?
Like send another airplane over here. Who knows?
Excuse me, you mean Saddam Hussein was responsible for September 11th?
No, I didn't say that.
You said he could send another plane over here. Who sent the first plane?
Well, Osama bin Laden did.
Oh, did Hussein have anything to do with that?
But I wouldn't.
Oh, so what threat did he represent then, sir? What could he do to us?
He could do a number of things.
Like what? Give me an example.
Well, he could send someone over here to blow us up.
He could. What was he going to send him in? With what? And who was he going to send?
He could send anyone.
Really? And what? And it doesn't matter that the CIA said.
Point of view.
Oh, so we went to war because he might be able to send someone over here?
Well, he sent someone over here to blow us up.
That's why we went to war, sir?
Well, I stand behind 100%.
What do you stand behind? You haven't given me a reason for war yet, sir. The president said we had to go to war because there was a clear and present danger. What was the clear and present danger?
Then someone over here to blow us up.
How could he harm us if he couldn't harm people in his own country? Okay, thank you, sir. God, it's so nice to hear intelligent conversation on talk radio.
Wednesday, 2:39 p.m.
Hey, where do you buy butter in a tube anyway? I've never seen that.
Thanks, Otto. Let me put this back. Little needly, 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 believe it was wobble, but we don't sell that. Here. Oh, did I stick my lead back in the eyeball? Sorry, here. Goodbye.
Sorry, here. It should be like.
Why is he on fire?
Oh, I took the wrong eyeball. Sorry, here. That's how it
is. Back!
It's almost as if I can hear Bob, that lovable cartoon character.
Basically, you're looking at a lot of history here.
Okay, here's the new bug thing. It's like this.
All right. Go ahead. Go with your bad self.
In their later stages of power, they tend to think they have more power than they have. They often overreach, they often get carried away with the kind of evangelical religion that they're out to spread morality around the world.
Bug, that lovable cartoon character.
It's me, Bug, and I used to be in Ronald's here.
And often as they try to do this, they have to spend more money than they have, and they start piling up debt.
Think that.
And that's a quick but not inaccurate summary, and the history supports it a lot more.
The roof of your mouth giving you evil thoughts. Who does the kid dance and sleep in your pants? It's wonderful, wonderful bug. It's bug, it's bug, the magical insect is here. It's bug, it's bug. You dance, you disappear. I don't know about this last line, Bug. It seems also homophobic.
But the basic reason for laying this out is that obviously what has gone wrong before is in the process of going very wrong again.
We interrupt this comedy sketch.
Why is it still you talking? It doesn't sound like a different person.
Attention, attention.
It's still you.
We interrupt this comedy sketch.
Why is
that
so stupid? You can't do that.
It's ironic that George W. majored in history at Yale, because I think he doesn't know any more about history than he knows about, you know, how to make fried calamari.
Every time I have the fried calamari with the hot sauce, I feel like I'm going to blow up.
Teacher.
In the first year of University of Chicago, from when I was very much persona non grata, speaking the truth in public and humiliated because I was a physician who tried to work with dying patients.
Yeah.
It seems like 100 years ago. When you're very alone, very isolated, and you walk on very thin ice, you have to be very careful that you know exactly how far you can go before the ice breaks. Cold floods, sick children, no food, no money, no medication. One tragedy after the other.
He's schizophrenic, I really do. Paranoid schizophrenia. Borderline, but he is, I think.
End of message.
The story is true.
Okay, whoever gets this message, whether it be Angel, Mo, or Major, it's time to take the outgoing off the summit meeting at the Phoenix Bookstore. I'm not saying that it's canceled. I'm just saying that it's time to take it off the air now. It's time to not let anybody know about it. If people caught on to it and they heard about it by now, fine. If they didn't, too bad. It's no big deal. I really don't want it. I've had these second thoughts because of the way it happened last week. Like I said, man, I mean, you know, 10 of us showed up, and most of us were bored out of their fucking skulls. I wasn't, but I could just tell by the body language and the movements that everyone was kind of pretty much bored out of their heads. And it's no fun sitting around in collective boredom. That's just very, very uncomfortable for most people. So it's time to take it off the air, no longer mention it whatsoever. Just don't mention it, period, final. Don't mention the Phoenix Bookstore meeting. And that's about all I have to say right now. Just take it off the air. Scratch it.
End of message.
Creation seems to come out of imperfection. It seems to come out of a striving and a frustration. And this is where I think language came from. I mean, it came from our desire to transcend our isolation and have some sort of connection with one another. And it had to be easy when it was just simple survival, like, you know, water, we came up with a sound for that. Or saber-tooth tiger right behind you, we came up with a sound for that. But when it gets really interesting, I think, is when we use that same system of symbols to communicate all the abstract and intangible things that we're experiencing. What is, like, frustration? Or what is anger or love? When I say love, the sound comes out of my mouth and it hits the other person's ear, travels through this Byzantine conduit in their brain, you know, through their memories of love or lack of love, and they register what I'm saying and they say, yes, they understand. But how do I know they understand? Because words are inert. They're just symbols. They're dead, you know? And so much of our experience is intangible. So much of what we perceive cannot be expressed. It's unspeakable. And yet, you know, when we communicate with one another and we...
We've got to examine ideas that are basic to our common sense. Ideas are very powerful.
We feel that we have connected and we think that we're understood. I think we have a feeling of almost spiritual communion, and that feeling might be transient, but I think it's what we live for.
Look, supposing I ask you, what did you do yesterday? Now, what did I do yesterday? In fact, I've forgotten. So, but most people say, well, let me see now. Let me get out my notebook. I got up at 7:30 and I brushed my teeth and I read the newspaper over a cup of coffee And then I looked at the clock and dressed and got in the car and drove downtown and did this and that in the office and so on. And you go on and on and on, and you suddenly discover that what you've described has absolutely nothing to do with what happened. You've described a scraggly, skeletal, fleshless list of abstractions. Whereas if you were actually aware of what went on, you could never describe it.
Coincidence could be called the junk food of understanding. It may be like an empty calorie or a dead end, but nevertheless, you have it. Of course, it can be indicative of what one is thinking without one's complete awareness, and may or may not be important, but it is nevertheless accompanied by a feeling of importance, or a pleasurable and eerie significance. The mind can be a significance junkie and gravitate toward a feeling of this is significant and that it's on to something, because that's the sort of thing it's built to do. This can lead you into some freaky areas if you don't manage the coincidences properly and see them for what they are, namely a statistical phenomenon indicative of expanded associational thinking rather than something necessarily significant.
Hello, Major Accent. This is the Bay Area representative, and I appreciate the information on Camarock. You might find out from your cousin, perhaps, where that was purchased, and I'd like to get one because then I wouldn't have to spend $450 from a Neiman Marcus catalog. And as for the strange quality of my voice, it actually isn't really my voice that sounds funny. It may have something to do with this $5 telephone that I found in a trash bin in the southeast corner of the lower concourse of Eastridge Mall.
End of message. Friday, 4:20 p.m. End of message.
It's a very natural emotion. How many of you as little children were allowed to cry? And how many of you were told big boys don't cry? Go to your room if you want to be a sissy. When you shape up, you can come out again. And you need many, many psychiatrists to deal with depressions and self-pity. Anger is a natural God-given gift that takes 15 seconds long enough to say no thank you. And if children are not allowed to express their own assertiveness and authority and natural anger, you end up with a million Hitlers, small and big Hitlers, with rage and revenge and hate. And the world is full of it. Hate is the greatest killer in terms of physical illness. Every unnatural emotion has its physical equivalent. Repressed grief, pulmonary problems, asthma. You can stop any asthmatic attack if you help them to cry. If you're ever in an emergency situation where there is no physician available, in a real emergency, make them cry and you can stop an asthma attack.
The Civil War forge of Southern resurrection, redemption, and revival.
Oh, it's crying time again. You're gonna leave me.
Why? Did she hurt you? Do you need to cry on my shoulder?
You gotta grow, man. Did you ever want anything more for yourself? I know this poor hapless son of a bitch does. I look into his sorry doe eyes and I see a man crying out. He's crying out, when, Lord? When can your servant ditch this foul-mouthed little chucklehead to whom I am a constant victim of his folly, so much so that it prevents me from ever getting to kiss a girl? When, Lord, when? When's gonna be my time?
Don't cry out for help.
I couldn't cry. So once again, I couldn't sleep.
Don't cry out for help.
I couldn't cry. So once again, I couldn't sleep.
Do you understand?
A very close friend of mine passed on today. He was a terrific golfer. And some of you may know the name. I don't know if you've ever heard. His name was Bob.
I've been in so much pain that I'd rather be shot to death, dear. Or just whipped to death.
But also joy?
Yeah, I've been in so much joy that I would rather be left alone, man. Take everything away and just let me sit there and have that much joy. I feel like I can float and stuff sometimes, you know? Right. Okay. It's like the best. No, I mean, you guys, that's the thing, though. A lot of other people can just walk around and see the beauty of the world. I can... Sorry. It's not as beautiful.
Now, nature abhors a vacuum, and since the mind is part of nature, the expanded mind desires content, in other words, stimulation. One often finds stimulation in modern environs with devices such as the computer and television. These things are stimulating to the senses because they are a fertile breeding ground for all sorts of subjects and objects coming up at right angles to each other. Eventually, between the many inside thoughts and many outside objects, something is going to hit. These hits provide the basis of the common delusion of the television is talking to me or is reading one's thoughts, and why this is a standard question during intake at hospitalization. If you had two groups of 25 people, all throwing softballs at each other, one group called TV and one group called mental thoughts, statistically you're going to have a certain number of balls hitting each other in mid-space, either glancing or head-on. For a hypomanic person watching TV is like a constant stream of softballs being thrown at each other. The coincidences in this case can be pleasurable and compelling, but also kind of scary because there is the possibility that you can get too drawn into this interesting experience and become lost in the coincidences. This can lead to a psychotic state, like a ball rolling down a hill. You start to see coincidences, and then you make connections between the coincidences, then connections between the connections, and then connections between those connections. Since this process is initially pleasurable, it is a kind of seduction. Since it is a seduction, it can also be scary. The instinctive recognition of the potential for getting lost is where the fear or freakiness of the experience comes from. This is why the bipolar experience, which includes hypomania and psychosis, are so close to each other, as well as madness and creativity. In this latter pair, both have in them an activity of seeing connections. The difference is, artists use the coincidences in the making of art, and healthy ones can manage them. People who go mad tend to get caught up in the experience and its accompanying chemical squirts, getting lost and addicted either to their own chemistry changes or seeking external substances to control or enhance these effects. The will to meaning that is particular to humans can explain why people go mad and not animals, because people's minds are geared primarily toward the experience of significance. As Kurt Vonnegut said, fish gotta swim, birds gotta fly. man gotta sit and wonder, why? Man understands his world by building mental maps of it from the answers to why questions. That is, finding the meaning to things. Animals build maps of their world through smells, sonar, sensing the magnetic field of the earth, temperature, and any number of ways. In other words, man makes his way through the world asking why, and when he finds out, aha! In this way, one can think of madness, at least in one sense, as the mechanism of finding meaning going out of control. So that I'm getting weird sounds in my headphones. You'll get like something talking about dreams, and then it'll just mentally remind me of another song about dreams, and then another theme will come up in the dream thing, and in the stream of consciousness editing, the sequential editing, and it'll go into another subject and another subject and another subject, and creates this stream of sound clips from songs and movies that sort of lead into each other and kind of go like a stream somewhere, but it doesn't really necessarily go anywhere except into the next stream.
Down through the centuries, the notion that life is wrapped in a dream has been a pervasive theme of philosophers and poets. So doesn't it make sense that death too would be wrapped in dream? That after death, your conscious life would continue in what might be called a dream body? It would be the same dream body you experience in your everyday dream life, except that in the post-mortal state, you could never again wake up. Down through the centuries, the notion that life is wrapped in a dream has been a pervasive theme of philosophers and poets. So doesn't it make sense that death too would be wrapped in dream? That after death, your conscious life would continue in what might be called a dream body? It would be the same dream body you experience in your everyday dream life, except that in the post-mortal state, you could never again wake up. Never again return to your physical body.
Oh, baby.
End of message.
And you wonder if you should take your friend serious, huh? I think he takes himself serious.
Sunday, 5:17 p.m. from...
If you're under 18, hang up now.
Please, she is starting to rule.
In case you didn't know already, this is Edie Thursday.
She is starting.
message. You may start your message now. You may start your message now.
Greed and the 1995 to 2005 credit bubble. Philosophical. The several waves of Washington's conservative-led liberation of financial services contradicted the sounder
this evening.
The indentured American household? Concern about Americans becoming indentured servants or sharecroppers laboring on behalf of whip-holding creditors, credit card companies in the United States, dollar-holding central bankers in Asia, became a marginal political issue in 2000.
Study of a man and a woman whose dreams and fantasies take on a light and a power of their own.
Who is she? I can't. I don't think it's Desiree, and it might be Tina, but I'm not sure. What do you think?
8:43 a.m.
God, what is this? You've talked to my message machine before. I don't know if you know who I am. Of course you don't, but I don't know who you are either. What is going on here? This is really bizarre. Leave your message and let me know what this is about. Bye.
End of message.
I went running down the street screaming that I was God. And then this guy came out and I was just like pelvic thrust at him and his wife. And I was like, you want an effing bet? I ain't God.
And I said, literally, you asshole, get back in here. What do you think you're doing? You know, you're disturbing the neighbors. You're going to call the cops. What is this all about?
I kind of just looked at him cool and calm and apologized to him. And I'm like, man, no one's going to call the police. Like, I didn't say this last part, but I'm thinking to myself, no one's going to call the police on God.
Oh, my God. And you know what? I am so right in my own head. I know I could go out there and get people to follow me. Not like these wackos with sheets on their heads. Not like those idiots.
Right.
But now it's just the new generation of the prophets.
Yep.
And were all the prophets people that were flopping around on the ground? Is that what this whole message was? The gift from the gods this whole time?
That's possible, isn't it? Yeah.
I've never been religious, ever. People say, no, you can't see into the future. That's what that gift is, but you gotta pay for it by getting slammed around.
As we walk around and interact with the world, you need some way of determining what's important, what's emotionally salient, and what's relevant to you versus something trivial and unimportant. How does this come about? We think what's critical is the connections between the sensory areas in the temporal lobes and the amygdala, which is the gateway to the emotional centers in the brain. The strength of these connections is what determines how emotionally salient something is. And therefore, you could speak of a sort of emotional salience landscape with hills and valleys corresponding to what's important and what's not important. And each of us has a slightly different emotional salience landscape. What might be going on is an indiscriminate strengthening of all these pathways. It's a bit like water flowing down rivulets along the cliff surface. When it rains repeatedly, there's an increasing tendency for the water to make furrows along one pathway, and this progressive deepening of the furrows artificially raises the emotional significance of some categories of inputs. So instead of just finding lions and tigers and mothers emotionally salient, he finds everything deeply salient. For example, a grain of sand, a piece of driftwood, seaweed. All of this becomes imbued with deep significance.
This tendency to ascribe cosmic significance to everything around you might be akin to what we call a mystical experience or a religious experience.
You too are the boss's son. That was the gospel. If Jesus had lived in India, they wouldn't have put him to death. Because everybody in India knows that we're all God in disguise. So if he had said, I and the Father are one, in India they would have said, hooray! You know? Lots of people in India know that perfectly well. But here, that's a no-no. Who the hell do you think you are?
I'm a hazard to myself.
You own the place? You keep your position. You're just a creature, a critter. It's in the family system, it's in everything. Because they have their own way of doing it in India. Because they have a delayed action on it. When you get to be a certain age, and after you've studied long enough with a certain guru, then, and then only, may you realize this. But until then, it's still a no-no. But if you've put in the time, they finally let you in. Here you have to wait until you're dead.
Mr. Timisteer, I have been to the apartment house of Mo Pineapple. I've been in his apartment. I have seen him in person, and I have seen Major Accent in person, along with various other people. I was very impressed. That apartment area was those people together. It was a nerve center of activity. So many projects were going on. It was incredible. In one corner, a computer, some sort of a high-level computer program was going on with advanced mathematics. I couldn't even tell what was happening. Another corner, advanced discussion groups were discussing various projects, and just so many things going on. So many highly motivated, talented people in brainstorming sessions, solving so many problems and working on so many projects. I left there totally motivated and just really ready to start my own project. It was really quite impressive. It's changed the whole direction of my life. I mean, imagine that happening today of all days, the day of the harmonic convergence. Obviously, that is a message to me from outside for me to redirect the direction of my life, obviously. I hope to get back there next week having some sort of a weenie roast, hopefully. I suggested the idea. Of course, I hope that they take me up on it because I'd really be honored to be part of that group and participate in the high-level activities that that group is involved in. In fact, right now I'm at the airport. I've been called away to Washington, D.C. for a top-level discussion with President Reagan. I'm certainly going to relay some of the things that I learned today in Mo Pineapple's apartment. Well, let me acknowledge some people. A Cappuccino Kid, I hope that your operation went well, and it's good to hear that Angel is out of...
You may start your message now.
Some patients with cheeses originating in the temple roads have intense religious auras. Intense experience of God visiting them.
Sometimes it's a personal God, sometimes it's a more diffuse feeling of being one with the cosmos.
Everything seems suffused with meaning.
The patient will say,
Finally,
I see what it's all really about. I really understand God.
I understand my place in the universe,
the cosmic scheme.
Why does this happen?
Why does it happen so often
in patient with temporal seizures?
Hello, Major Accent. This is the Bay Area representative, and I appreciate the information on Camarock. You might find out from your cousin, perhaps, where that was purchased, and I'd like to get one because then I wouldn't have to spend $450 from a Neiman Marcus catalog. And as for the strange quality of my voice, it actually isn't really my voice that sounds funny. It may have something to do with this $5 telephone that I found in a trash bin in the southeast corner of the lower concourse of Eastridge Mall.
End of message.
Both artists and madmen, and artists who become madmen, can be thought of as dabblers in dopamine, or dopamine, M-E-A-N, as in meaning. This too can explain why people go mad and not animals, because people are geared primarily toward the experience of significance. As Kurt Vonnegut said, fish gotta swim, birds gotta fly. Man gotta sit and wonder why. Man understands his world by building mental maps of it from the answers to why questions, that is, finding the meaning to things and processes in his world. Animals build maps of the world through smells, sonar, sensing the magnetic field of the earth, temperature, and any number of ways. Man makes it through asking why, and when he finds out, aha! In this way, one can think of madness, at least in one sense, as the mechanism of finding meaning going out of control. Like a fire once used to warm, taking flight and raging through the mind. Is that noise? Someone's singing. Maybe that's a loop. I don't have any... Oh, maybe that's a ghost. God, that was a weird noise. It sounded like a ghost. I wonder if that actually will come on the playback. But anyway, I don't have any set formula for what I do. I just work on it and bounce it around between these three programs. Until I feel like it's done. And I can, you know, I can edit things out, I can put stuff in. If I get an idea of, you know, this, I need a sound here of a car going by, a Doppler effect, I can add it, you know, or I can find it on the internet and stick it in there in a few minutes. And, you know, whatever I need to put in or make, whatever I need, I can put it in there and build it up and... You know, it may be taken out later, or it may work wonderfully or not work at all. And so it's just a matter of working on it until I feel that it's done.
This has been Needle in the Red. Episode 27. Walking on Rooftops. www.nationalsinnickel.com. 2006. T-shirts now available.
This is NSCN.